Everybody, it is Sunday, January the 14th, 2024. It's 7:59 p.m. Toronto time. This is the Fakeologist Show. We do this show Sunday through Thursday, around 8 o'clock, sometimes 8:30. How you guys doing? It's cold here in Toronto. I know it's pretty much cold everywhere in Oops, you missed the cough button there, John. And we are streaming live at fakeologist.com/live. And when you go there, you should see audio streaming and video streaming. We should be doing both. And actually, looks good on the FakeoTube side. FakeoTube is streaming. And I'm going to get the chat going on FakeoTube. And we're also on YouTube. And don't forget, once this video has finished broadcasting on YouTube, we will delete it. Because YouTube doesn't like us, but for the grace of God, they let us stream live, unfettered. How long that will last, I have no idea, but that's why FakeoTube. FakeoTube is my video platform. It works pretty well. Doesn't have billions of dollars behind it, but it does have your donations at fakeologist.com/donate. And pretty much all that money goes to FakeoTube. And on FakeoTube, I have almost 7,000 videos. And you can download them all at once using Resilio Sync. I don't have everything perfectly set up on that yet, because most people don't use that. But I will start downloading the videos individually. And you can get it through Resilio Sync, which I've told my guest tonight is probably the most decentralized way to distribute videos. And when all the platforms go away or get censored, if you want to share videos, files, anything, it's just peer-to-peer. So it's your computer to my computer to whoever else wants to mirror it all over the world. And it's extremely fast. And if you go to fake11.com/sync audio or fake11.com/sync video, you can sync all my audios. And there are over 2,000 audios now that we've done in the last 11 years. And the minute this show is saved, you will get it on your computer if you have it synced, even before I put it on the website. So how's that for a deal? The videos are later. I don't really have that going yet, but there are a few videos that are sitting in there, a couple gigs. So I highly recommend that be something you check into. Because as everyone here knows, I love technology, and that's half the reason I do this show, because I just like playing around and being a talk show host. But otherwise, I do like talking about all the topics. We had a huge audio chat this morning that I haven't posted yet, and we talked about all kinds of things. Went for about 6 hours. It's sponsored by TypoEr, who's been here 10 years, and he pitched in. Well, thank you so much. And we had quite the conversation about Joe Rogan with Loopy in Ireland and Farce Value in Texas. And that was fun. If you like the whole topic of androgyny and transgenderism and all the crazy things people do in the mainstream media. And it was pretty wild. I enjoyed it a lot. And we even introduced one of Sinead O'Connor's greatest hits to someone who lives miles down the street and didn't even know that song. So that was kind of strange, but it was good. Anyway, tonight's guest is not a fakeologist. And as I've told, well, I guess he probably is. Well, I'll have to ask him if he is, but we don't always talk exactly about media fakery. I do go where the research takes me. So a link takes me to a link, takes me to a link. And then I get on these streaks where I start looking into one thing or the other. And I don't even remember how I got exactly to this exact topic. And it doesn't even matter. But I started researching Ernst Zundel a couple of weeks ago. And when you're researching, you just start pulling strings and you go all kinds of places. And I came to a website on BitChute, because that's the other thing. As you all know, I'm back on BitChute. I was off BitChute for a long time because it was so slow. It didn't work. and the comments weren't notifying me. But now that I'm back on BitChute, I noticed that it's taken all my time away from all the other places I used to go. So on BitChute, there is tons of material about fakery, and Fake Nukes Phil is on BitChute, and he's talking outwardly and upwardly about 9/11. So that's been pretty interesting, because there haven't been too many 9/11 talkers in the last 10 or 11 years that I've seen, and he's gone wild on it, and he's getting pretty popular, and so other shows are picking him up, including mine. He's here regularly on Wednesdays, but he's creating tons of videos. He really gets it, which is extremely rare in the 9/11 research to have someone that goes as far as he goes. So I'm really having fun with him. Anyway, one of the topics was Ernst Zundel, and I found a site that I probably was already subscribed to and started seeing a lot of Ernst's material keep popping up. So then it was quite clear that this channel that's on your screen now, John Robinson 101, is pretty much all Ernst Zundel. So I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. So I thought I'll ask the guy who runs the site if he doesn't mind if I just download all the videos at once, because BitChute isn't the easiest thing to navigate. Just you can't even search for a specific video on a channel. So I told him I use Resilio Sync, which I mentioned earlier. So I thought, why don't we get that set up? And then one thing led to another. And John wanted to, so I said, by the way, John, where are you in the world? Because obviously it doesn't say anything about who he is or where he is. And turns out he lives down the highway from me in Toronto. So then I thought, then he said, oh, I'd like to meet you before I agree to an interview. But you did link all the videos. And we had a meeting at where else would you meet in Canada? Tim Hortons coffee shop, of course, because that's the only coffee shop pretty much left. We had a pretty cool meeting and got to know each other. So let me just stop right now and introduce John from the Toronto area. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, real good. And we had a meeting at the Tim Hortons. And I wasn't sure exactly. I don't usually meet anybody. I've only met maybe one or two people in 10 years of doing this, because most people are not in Toronto, period. They're everywhere else. Man, actually, Canada is one of the least visiting countries to my website, which is too bad.
Anyway, yeah, I really enjoyed meeting you. We had a good talk there.
Yeah, I think you see that I'm real. You're real. What is the main reason you wanted to actually meet? Because you're old fashioned?
No, exactly that, really. You can never really know a person unless you actually meet them face to face. So that's why I decided it was a good thing. I mean, when you're talking to people independent, well, such as, let's say, any kind of audio stream or whatever, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to know them. But if you're sitting across from them and you talk to them and you look into their eyes, you can basically tell whether or not they're legitimate or not, you know, whether they're pulling your leg or whether... And when I met you, I said, now, this man is legitimate.
So, oh, good. Thanks. You're probably way better judge than me, because I don't meet a lot of people. My job for the last 35 years is pretty independent. I don't really meet people except dock workers, and they're cool people, but they don't say much. But you've been meeting people, especially around Ernst Zundel, for how long?
Oh, I guess if you really want to go way back in the dim mists of history, I first met Mr. Zundel in 1975.
That's amazing. So, and you've probably, because you are, well, the first thing you said to me is you're his videographer. So pretty much all these videos that are recorded of him, that's you behind the camera.
Yeah, about 90, 95%. Yeah. Some of them were done in other places, in other countries where I was not there, and they sent the video to us, and I edited it and made a video out of it for here, that kind of stuff. But like I said, about 95%, I was behind the camera and did the editing as well, sometimes with the help of other people.
Well, that means you pretty much had to meet almost everyone in the video. Any guest, or you had some kind of interaction of some sort, so you met a lot of people. That's
I sure did.
Because one thing Ernst did is he met a lot of people. He had a very curious mind, is what I'm getting from watching these videos.
Oh yeah, very, very, very. One thing that doesn't show up on the videos so much, because he was always talking about other subjects, was his interest in health. You know, good food, vitamins, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He was very interested in that. And only one or two videos came out with that as the subject, but he was very interested in those things.
Now, my impression of Ernst, because I have been a media consumer ever since, instead of going to parties and drinking beer, I consume media and work with computers. So I have always been a mainstream media consumer up until 2012.
Oh.
So my first impression of Ernst in the 80s was just from our state broadcaster's newscasts. I really didn't know anything other than what they said. And I thought he was a bit of a nut, because my only image was him yapping in front of the camera with a hard hat on. That was the image that was burned into my brain.
Yeah, he was pretty flamboyant.
But I'm always interested in, I've always, even in high school, I think I wrote an article against communism back in the 80s, late 70s. Because I thought fairly right-wing ideas compared to everyone else. And so I wasn't an idealist or left person ever. That's just the way I came out. So I was kind of anti-communist. I did, in our own student newspaper, write one or two articles, even though I'm not really a writer, that was anti-communist. So I always tended to look at whoever was against the mainstream. And when I lived out in Vancouver, the guy I always loved to read was Doug Collins. And Doug Collins was, I think, a British military guy who was basically speaking out against whatever the common mainstream narrative was. So I always liked reading him. And then, of course, he started to get into trouble for what he wrote. So that made him even more interesting.
Yeah, Doug Collins was originally lived in Britain. He was really, born there. And during the Second World War, he joined the army. Mm-hmm. And he was a sergeant in the British infantry. And he got captured at Dunkirk. Mm-hmm. And he had a really interesting time after that. For years, he was prisoner of the Germans and stuff. And I forget how many times he escaped. I think it was about six times or something. He escaped and got recaptured. And eventually, he finally got away from them and got back to Britain in 1944. And he immediately went back into the army, take part in D-Day and all that. So he was a fantastic, colorful character. And then eventually he moved to Canada and got into the media, from which you were listening to him and reading about him and so on.
Yeah.
And I met him over a few times and videotaped some of his talks and things like that. And he was just a gem. He really was.
I thought he was great. And I thought all his experience gave him so much credibility that I listened to him. Mm-hmm. And I discarded all the people that were attacking him, because I thought, who are you guys arguing with? You can't argue with someone who was there, really. And had world experience, where everyone else is just republishing the narrative. So
he was really for freedom of speech. He was a defense witness for Ernst Zundel in the 1985 trial that he had. And afterwards, he said at a meeting with us supporters and stuff afterwards, he was saying, he said, I really don't give a shit about Ernst Zundel. I care about the freedom of speech, that he should have the right to say what he wants to say. And that's why I'm here. you know, is for his freedom. And I thought, now there's a man for you.
And I'm the same way. And that's my main interest in Ernst Zundel, because I think he was at the cutting edge of fighting new laws that were introduced or are being continually introduced to suppress speech. I don't even know if we really have the right to free speech in Canada. I know it's enshrined in the Bill of Rights in the United States. I don't really know if any Commonwealth country really has any special rights other than what's allowed by the state. So,
yeah, we certainly had more freedom of speech back in the day, back in the 60s and 70s, and even the beginning of the 80s, maybe, than we certainly have now, that's for sure. It's been eroded big time. You know, you have to really be careful what you say and what you don't say.
Right. So that's my real interest in Ernst, not so much about exactly what he was saying. I just figure free speech has to be absolute. And if it's not, then it's a slippery slope to just stop everything eventually from being said. And the stuff I talk about is really kind of off the radar. 9/11 is, I just talk about it from a media hoax point of view. And I just originally wanted to see if anyone else had that point of view. Turns out I was really late to the party, and the whole thing was pretty much solved maybe 7 or 8 years before I got there. Maybe, well, 5 years. By a couple of guys that I still to this day think have it figured out the best, and I promote them. Nothing's changed my mind in 11 years. And one of the guys, Simon Shack, I'm probably going to go on a show with him in Ireland in the next week or this week, because I still think he's right. I still think Simon's right. After all these years and all these people that have put out challenging views that really haven't said one thing to counter anything in my mind. So that's why I'm interested in Ernst Zundel. And I'm not, I've sort of stayed away from the Holocaust idea because it's been so weaponized and toxified. And now I think it might even be somewhat illegal in some aspects to talk about it in Canada as of within 12 months ago.
Yeah, it seems that way. But the whole concept of the Holocaust, World War II, about Germany and Nazi Germany and stuff has always been and will continue to be politicized completely. That's why it's so hard to find any unbiased views in the mainstream media and so on, because it's just so politicized. And it's got more politicized as time goes on instead of less. Most other subjects, you know, they're hotly debated at the time and a little bit time after, and then they slowly cool down and people come out with whatever is more or less the truth, etc. Yeah. Except that issue. That one doesn't go away, and it gets more politicized and more propagandized, etc., as time goes on. You know, so you would wonder, why would they do that? Why don't they just relegate it to history and let it go? But doesn't seem they want to do that for some reason or other.
Well, for a lot of reasons, a lot of people think they've figured out the reason. So let's there's so many ways we can go with this interview because there's so much to talk about. Why don't we just talk about a little bit about your history, where you came from, where you landed in Canada, and just your experience, and then how you got involved and why you got involved as the videographer for Ernst Zundel, because you're pretty much as close to the person as you can get without being married to him, I suppose. And one of the things that I have asked a couple of my German friends and some of the Germans I've met just doing my own research, I wanted to talk about Ernst and Ernst Zundel and just Germany in general and what appears to be just the absolute occupation and suppression of German history and Germany. But none of them wanted to talk about it. They're just not interested. And you told me at the meeting, what about Germans in general?
Germans in general are probably the most brainwashed people on the planet at this moment in time. You know? I mean, a lot of people think of propaganda and they think of indoctrination and they look at what's going on in our schools and in our media and in the movies and all this kind of stuff. And they'd be right to say that, wow, look at this. Look at all this propaganda that's going on. Look how we're being manipulated, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, all that is absolutely nothing compared to what they do in Germany and by extension around Europe, Central Europe and stuff. But in Germany, they are the most brainwashed, absolutely amazing people. They don't want them to have any other point of view, any other way of getting any other information. As my site here, John Robinson 101, it is blocked from Europe.
All of Europe.
Well, most of Europe. Strangely enough, there's a couple of, two of the main countries where it is not blocked is Belarus and Ukraine.
Yeah. I think it's because there's no one in the Ukraine right now, so they don't care. Probably five people left.
Yeah. But, you know, and a couple of little ones, Montenegro or something. But all the major countries and stuff, it's blocked.
Is it blocked in Russia?
Yes, it's blocked in Russia.
Okay.
And so this is why it's so hard. I mean, there are a few adventurous Germans and others in Europe that know the idea of the VPN. And they do come to the channel and so on, but that's a very minuscule amount of people, and the majority of them are just, it's not their fault that they have this view, right? And, but they have it because it's hammered anywhere. And if you disagree with it publicly, then they just bring down the avalanche on you. I'm surprised that there are so many people still, I mean, it's still a very small percentage, but there are so many people that broke away from all this. I mean, Ernst had lots and lots of supporters over in Germany, thousands of supporters. How they managed to dodge the bullet, so to speak, is just amazes me to no end, you know. But anyway, on the most part, I mean, I had one person. I used to have a bookstore at one time.
Okay.
And I remember these two people come walking very young. Young teenagers, maybe 13, 14, something like that, right? The first one comes walking in, and he's a young Canadian lad.
Okay.
And he's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and looking at all the stuff. Oh, wow, look at all this stuff. This is cool, et cetera, et cetera. And in comes another one walking in, and it's his friend who's German. He's visiting from Germany. And he comes in all hunched over and looking very trepidatious and kind of almost scared of what he's seeing.
What's he seeing? What's the name of your, was your bookstore specializing in one topic, this topic? Or?
Well, history, yeah.
Okay, history.
Yeah. And so anyway, he looked around. I showed him a couple of things. I actually had on the wall very large blow-up photographs of the Auschwitz concentration camp back during the war.
Okay.
Aerial photographs taken by the Allied Air Forces. Just a couple of them. So I just mentioned to him something about them. Mm-hmm. And he literally, shaking, he ran out of the place. And his young Canadian friend kind of looked, watched him go out, and the young guy looked at me and said, "What's wrong with him?" I didn't need to go into the big explanation about what was wrong with him, but anyway, so he went out as well, he left as well. But that's an example of a lot of Germans' frames of mind and reference. You know, sometimes
he was triggered by the picture of Auschwitz.
I tried to explain a little bit about him. I wasn't saying anything about it. I said, "Look, over here is the sports field, and over here is the swimming pool, and over here," and that was it. And they actually get a physical reaction out of it.
Wow.
They're so brave. I mean, not everybody is like that, of course, but a lot are like that. And the other ones are just basically brainwashed. I've run into others that are like that. So anyway, for the ones that aren't, I'm quite surprised how they managed to dodge that bullet. I was quite amazed about that. But we had some good times over in Germany when we used to go there.
Now, where are you from? Where were you born? Let's get your background a little bit, whatever you want.
Well, I was actually born over there.
Where?
Over in Germany in the Rhineland.
Okay.
And my father was from West Prussia.
Okay.
Which during the 30s, after the First World War, was known as the Polish Corridor.
Okay.
So he was from.
I'm going to bring up a map because I love maps.
Oh, maps are good. Yeah, maps are good.
I'm going to see because now I can only bring up today's map. I guess I could probably find an old map, but what's the nearest town I can punch in Germany?
Of what?
Where you're from.
Oh, where I was born?
Yeah.
Nearest town is called Bielefeld. Bielefeld.
Oh, Bielefeld, Germany. Okay. I'm going to do that. And I just want to see where it is.
Yeah. And my mother was from Schleswig-Holstein up by the Danish border.
Okay.
And they
That's pretty much Western Germany.
Pretty much, yep. As you can see, it's close to the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Yeah, northwestern area.
Right, okay.
And so they met after the war and got together. And
where is West Prussia on this map? Over here?
Well, the main part of West Prussia would be Gdansk, which used to be called Bromberg, right? That was the main city in that area.
Okay, got it. So that was part of the Prussian Empire.
Yeah, initially, yes. It was all Prussian and German stuff. Actually, at that time, 1939, when they they created the country of Poland, the name Poland had not been on a map of Europe for 135 years. Mm-hmm. So they just decided to make it up. Anyway.
Some history buffs brought it back.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so anyway, I was born there, and actually what happened was it was 1948, the Berlin blockade era, that my father decided that it looks like there might be another war, and he didn't want any part of it, because he said everything he thought was worth fighting for was gone. So he started looking around for a place to emigrate to. And he looked through a number of countries, and so he finally decided on Canada, and they accepted him, and he went there, and he rummaged around for about a year first to try to get things settled, so then he could get my mother and my siblings to go over there. When we went over there, I was 14 months old. Mm-hmm. So I was basically brought up in Canada, Canadian of German descent, you might say.
Yeah. And you came to the Toronto area?
Yep. And then actually started off, father started off in Montreal, but there was no work there, so he...
That's where most immigrants came through, by boat to Montreal. It's the first major city by boat on the St. Lawrence.
Yeah,
so that was the main port of entry, I would say, for most Canadians, Montreal.
And that's where Ernst showed up first as well. So,
right.
So anyway.
Even though there's a large English population, or there was in the 50s, it was a real Anglo-French city. I don't know if it was half and half, but the Anglos were definitely a big part of Montreal at that time.
Yes, they were. Yep, absolutely.
So it's not like you had to speak French. You could function perfectly well in English. You still can a little bit now, from what I understand, but for the most part, the Frenchies make it really uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But I don't hold that against them. I figure if they want to defend their cultural heritage and stuff, I see nothing wrong with that. Yeah. But then everybody else in Canada should be allowed to do the same.
Yes.
But we have this encroaching Frenchness everywhere. So in any case, that's beside the point.
We could go down that rabbit hole, but I think they're having a hard time. They have to pretty much keep their culture enforced by force, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So that's not a winning formula long term. It's not going to work, but they can try. Anyway, so your dad moved down to the Toronto area, like many English people.
And we brought
Lower or Upper Canada.
Yeah, when he got there, he could speak Polish, Russian, German, and then he was learning his English while he was there. And we came along and set up shop.
He could speak Russian?
Yes, he could speak Russian.
Wow.
Well, because he spent 3 years on the Russian front, and he just naturally went and learned some of the language. Because actually there's some similarities between Polish and Russian, so it wasn't overly difficult for him. to do that.
Okay.
So, yeah. So anyway, and being brought up in Canada, my parents did not have very well paying jobs or anything. They both ended up having to work, etc. So the time that they spent with their children was not as much as they would have liked, which means I was left to the devices of the television set and the movies and the education system. And slowly, without me realizing it, I became kind of anti-German.
Right.
Because of all this. I didn't actually realize it because I was living in a German household, blah, blah, blah. Right. But my first indication was at grade one, maybe, when I was getting harassed because of my German name and my German accent, which I had got. And so we talked to a Scottish friend, and I decided I should get rid of my German accent, which I did. And he also said, maybe you should change your name to John. I said, yeah, okay. My parents said, yeah, okay, we'll do that. And things got a little better. So that was okay. So eventually, I really didn't want too much to do with all that. My mother, of course, she was, my father said I should learn, children should learn some German, or whatever, especially me, because I was the only boy. Mm-hmm. And my mother said, oh, no, you don't need to do that. We're in Canada now. English is fine. So she was no help in that regard. So eventually, I think in 1979, it was maybe, my parents were going back to another trip to Germany, and my father wanted me to go along. He said, I'm getting old. I'd like to introduce it to the old country, etc. And due to my mindset at the time, I didn't want to go. But he didn't say that because I knew that I was the only boy and he really wanted to do stuff with me. So I reluctantly agreed to go. Of course, I didn't let him know it was reluctant.
Mm-hmm.
So the most interesting thing that happened to me was when we got there, got to say again, it was kind of an anti-German mindset I had, right? Got there, the plane landed. We're getting off the plane. And when my foot touched the ground, it wasn't an intellectual thing, it was an emotional thing. I felt I was coming home. I just couldn't believe that. Where did that come from? So that was a good start, anyway, on my travels. And so we went there, did all the things that we did around there, and it was nice. It was, met some relatives, and I'd already told my parents, I'm not going to waste the entire trip just sitting around with relatives. I want to see the country. So my father and I went off and saw the country. And it was fun. It was a good time. I liked it. Anyway, we got back. And at some point, my father had, knew some other another old veteran there who had a store. And he said, okay, well, why don't you, there's a group in Buffalo, New York, that's having a German thing. It's a pro-German group. And maybe you might want to go to that. And my father said, yeah, I'd love to go to that. So he asked me if I would go. Again, I reluctantly agreed that I would do that. So I went with him. And it was an interesting meeting, etc. And there was some book tables there, sellers. And I was looking around. I thought, well, while I'm here, I might as well buy a book. So I looked around. I picked up the book. I handed it to the seller with the money. And he looked at me probably a good few seconds, which I thought was, what's the holdup? Mm-hmm. So then he opened the book, he wrote something in the cover, and he gave it back to me and took the money, and that was it. So I started ordering a few books, and then I decided maybe Canada is a good place to spend my money instead of the U.S. How can I find a place to buy some books in Canada? And then I remembered that somebody had written something in my book. So I looked at it, it was a phone number. And it turned out it was Ernst Sundel's phone number.
Wow.
So my father and I went to visit him, and that was in 1975. And we hit it off. Everybody hit it off, and the whole thing just spoke to me. So we started volunteering to help him, et cetera, et cetera, and that's how it all started, really.
What was he saying in 1975 that your dad and you like?
Well, my father, of course, he was really upset about how Germans and German soldiers and things were portrayed in the media, etc. Mm-hmm. Right. And so here was one German who was standing up for the truth about it all and for our honor, etc. So he caught that immediately. And that's what made him think, and myself, I'm not quite sure. I think just like that stepping off the plane thing, I guess there was this part of the German thing in me that hadn't been completely snuffed out by our system that spoke to me. And I could see, I started seeing a lot of things that I hadn't known about before. And I thought, wow, this is a revelation, really. And so it started making me feel better, of course, it would, right? And yeah, so we kept doing that. And eventually, Ernst got himself, well,
how many times did you visit Ernst? Was it just to talk about the war and the Canadian experience for Germans? Was that the main reason you guys met?
Well, the main reason why I went there in the first place was to see how many books he had for sale.
Yeah.
It was just a talking with him, mm-hmm. et cetera, you know, expanding on and listening to what he was saying with my father about all these things. Because, of course, Ernst had a very large respect for all German veterans.
Right.
Etc.
And the irony, Ernst was a pacifist. And from what I understand, the reason he came to Canada, the reason he chose Canada like you did, was because it was the only country where they didn't have a standing army, or there was no draft, actually. There was no draft into the Canadian army.
Yeah, exactly. There's no peacetime draft. You know, you either went or you didn't went. All other countries more or less did that, especially European countries. You know, come of age, you normally get drafted in for, I don't know, a year or two or however long, depending on the country. Then you go back to your normal life, etc. But he didn't even want to do that because he believed all the propaganda about how bad Germans were and all this stuff. So he wanted nothing to do with military or anything like that because he was brought up as a pacifist. His parents had become Seventh-day Adventists after the war.
Okay.
Because they were helped by members of the Seventh-day Adventist thing. Later on, he would call them Rice Christians, you know.
Oh, really?
Because we helped you, because we fed you, then you listened to our sermons. And basically
Makes sense.
We recruited you that way, type of thing.
Right.
So, yeah, that's why he went.
Recruitment for food, pretty good deal.
Yeah, especially when you're starving. It
yeah, makes I can sense. See that.
So, yeah, and then the video part was 1981. Ernst had already got himself into a well-known position. Of course, he started political activities back in the 60s, actually.
Yeah, tell us, before you get to before you jump into the 70s, what was he doing when he got to Canada? Because he wasn't always just focused on the one topic he's famous for.
No, when he first came to Canada, he wasn't focused on that topic at all.
Yeah, not a bit.
Nope, not a bit. No, he was a trades person, right? Mm-hmm. He had learned the trade of photo retouching stuff for advertising purposes and so on.
And he came in the 50s to Canada before you, or about the same time?
Well, after us, actually. Our family came to Canada in 1951.
Okay.
And he came to Canada in 1958.
Okay.
So
when your dad came, how long before he became a Canadian citizen, your dad?
I don't actually recall. I must confess, I don't recall.
But he did become a Canadian citizen?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious what the process was for Germans. Were they treated kindly for citizenship when they came to Canada? Were they considered refugees? What was a German to Canada at the time? You know,
I don't recall.
Okay.
So he eventually became a German citizen.
A Canadian citizen.
Canadian citizen, and so forth. And of course, he got all of his children to become Canadian citizens and all that. But Ernst, he came here, he started working, he went to learn more better English, where he met his wife, his first wife. And then they moved to, because she wanted to go back to where her family was. This was in Toronto, so they moved back to Montreal. And so he started learning French. And he met Adrian Arcand.
Now, why would he do that? Because Adrian Arcand, from what I read, was a pretty small sliver of the political spectrum.
Well, it was because he started doing political things. He started getting on talk shows.
Who, Adrian?
Radio talk shows. Ernst was.
Oh, Ernst was. So
yeah, a lot of radio talk shows and stuff about anti-communism and how he saw the communism creeping into the universities that he was attending, trying to get a better education here, etc. And he said one former Canadian Secret Service man suggested to him, after he listened to Ernst and got just to what he was, he said, maybe you should go visit this guy, Adrian Arcand. He seems to be the kind of guy you would learn something from, et cetera, on your kind of on your wavelength.
But, so Ernst was concerned about communism, because even though, was he political when he came here right away, or was he anti-communist because of the war? How did he become that way, and why did he see it as a danger? I'm really trying to get into Ernst's head, how he became sort of activated. Or were all Germans like that? Like your dad. Was your dad anti-communist? Because
my father was a very simple man. Mm-hmm. And he was the kind of person who was just an honest, hardworking family man.
Okay.
And during, when the war come around and stuff like that, when they said, okay, we would like to draft you into the army, he went to the army because his country called, and therefore he would go.
Right.
That type of thing. So he's but he wasn't really big on the political spectrum of things, actually, until probably after we met Ernst, you know. And then Ernst got talking a lot about things, and eventually about the forbidden subject, etc. And so he became more so at that time. But earlier on, not. So anyway, so Ernst got into all these things because of his going to the university and stuff. I mean, that's where they promote all this lefty stuff, right? More so even now than they did then.
Well, Ernst was a bit of an intellectual even back then, even though he was a tradesman learning being in graphic arts.
Mm-hmm.
Photo retouching, but he went to university. Was it for something else, or that? How did he get mixed up with all the commies at university?
Well, I don't know the details about everything. He was in university, but he was a editor of the university newspaper, and he did a number of other things there.
Okay.
And in 1963, he applied for Canadian citizenship.
Okay.
And he was refused with no reason given.
But at the time, he was, and his writings were known to anyone that wanted to review.
Yeah, but he wasn't doing all the things that he is now famous for, right?
But he was writing anti-communist stuff at school.
Yeah, and he was, like I said, all these talk shows and stuff like that.
So he was already known. He was already a public figure.
Yes.
Okay.
And then
he wasn't your average German anymore. Really?
No, he wasn't.
No. So he was on the radar. So if anyone wanted to look at this guy, then he had a file or a dossier already.
So in 1968, I think it was, the then Prime Minister, Liberal Prime Minister of Canada, Lester Pearson, he was retiring.
Okay.
So he was resigning the post.
Yes.
And so the Liberal Party had a
leadership convention.
Yeah, leadership convention. And whoever became leadership of the party then would become automatically Prime Minister of Canada.
That's right. That's how our system works. British parliamentary system. Yeah.
So, very simple. So Ernst said, I got to do this. So he's going to go and run. He was a member of the Liberal Party.
Yeah.
And so he's going to run for leadership against right. everybody else. Well, back in the day, the computer system that was used back then is not like the system that computers that they have now.
Right.
I see Dave J. just asked, can you ask guest these Spezifizieren also Deutsch. What does Mr. Dave J. mean by that exactly?
I don't know, but don't get too too lost in the chat. I'm not looking at the chat.
I'm not either. I just happened to catch that one.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're
Specken Sie Deutsch. I think that's what he's trying to say.
Yeah,
that's about the only phrase I know too. I think it means can you speak German?
Yeah.
Specken Sie Deutsch.
Yeah. So anyway, the computer system there was all made on. Pardon me?
Can you speak German?
With some trouble, I can, yes. But I can understand everything. I can read everything.
Okay.
Watch movies, all that stuff. Just my talking through lack of
practice.
And my grammar's not that good. So on. So it's kind of an embarrassment.
There's different levels of German, isn't there? My grandparents were German. So I can't remember if they spoke upper or lower German.
Yeah, well, High German is basically the language that was made so that everybody in the country could talk to each other. The rest of it is all the various dialects from various areas.
Oh, I see. That's Lower German?
Yeah, Lower German. Some dialects these people can't understand and these people can't understand. Where my mother comes from, where we went to visit in 79, stuff like that, their dialect is, what the heck was it called anyway? It was called something... It'll come to me. Anyway, it was a dialect. We went there. I remember we all got together with the family and everybody was speaking High German. You know, and of course, the more beer that was consumed, the less High German was spoken and the more the dialect was spoken. That by the end of the evening, my father and I couldn't understand a word that was being said by anybody. But we
enjoyed ourselves. Okay. Wow. That's funny. See, I didn't know that.
It was. Yeah, it was funny.
That is funny.
It was called Plattdeutsch. Yeah,
that's what Plattdeutsch. It was. Okay. But anyway, so where are we? So
1968, he's running.
He was going to run for the leadership of the Liberal Party.
Yep. So they had printed out these thousands and thousands of computer cards. What do you call those things?
Punch cards.
Punch cards, yeah.
Right.
With all the names of all the candidates on them and all that stuff.
And you had to actually punch them or fill them in with a piece of...
Well, you fed them into the machine and did whatever it did. But the point was that in order to become a candidate, you had to get X number of...
votes.
OKs from members of the party and stuff that said they agreed with you more or less, and then you could become a candidate.
Okay.
And he went around and he just, you know, went around, talked it all and sundry, and eventually he got enough people to agree with that he could become a candidate. So he went in there, and then the judges would look at his group of, you know, what he's, you know, all these different people who were saying they agreed, and he said, oh, no, he's no good. He's no good. He's no good. So it was always below the limit. So after the third time of that, Ernst told him, he said, I'm going to, you know, this is nonsense, etc. You're just doing this, you know, just to keep me out of this. And I'm not going to put up with that. I'll tell the media. I'll do this. I'll do that. Unless you, you know, be honest about this. And so eventually
rocking the vote.
Yeah. So eventually they allowed him to do that. But what did that mean? That mean they had to reprint. You know, 10,000 cards because they had to add his name.
Right.
So nobody was happy about that.
So he already pissed off the Liberal Party.
He did. Yep.
The leadership.
But eventually, of course, he lost because he got to speak in front of the convention, like 50,000 people in the arena. He got to speak to them about, you know, what his concerns were and what he thought Canadian society should be and so on.
Right.
So, but anyway. He lost, of course, because he didn't have enough recognition and so on and so forth.
Well, he was an establishment.
Yeah, it was an establishment type of thing. So
they don't bubble up to the top. The people that are at the top are pulled to the top. Nobody bubbles up. Nobody's unauthorized in politics for sure. It's a show.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, because of all this, of course, Ernst had, you know, developed a very good supporter base of all kinds of Canadians. You know? And matter of fact, the German Canadians at that time that supported him were in the minority. He had support from all kinds of other ethnics and English-speaking Canadians, and even some French-speaking Canadians. And so, so that was basically becoming his...
Are there any recordings of that speech?
Oh.
That would be interesting. Somebody must...
I remember the day when we were talking about that or whatever. And he had, of course, then he moved back to Toronto and so on. And he said, yes, during the moves, he said, it seems when he did that speech, he did. He had a, what, you know, one of those old reel-to-reel things.
But the CBC must have recorded it.
And he recorded it, etc. And then when he looked for it, when he came back, it seems he lost it on the way. So in some of his moves and stuff, he couldn't find it anymore. And he was really upset about that. Well, yeah, maybe CBC might have it in their archives. It's possible.
That would be worth getting. Because I wonder what what he was talking about.
It would be nice if you could possibly pry it loose, you know. Or if they even kept it, because back in the day, maybe they thought, ah, well, it's not that important.
Well, I'm sure they... Leadership convention, I'm pretty sure they would have recorded that.
Yeah.
At least for the radio.
Yeah. I remember on one of the anniversaries of that, must have been 78, maybe. Maybe 78. Don't recall exactly. But we went to, they had another Liberal convention going on in Ottawa. And so we went down there and we demonstrated in front of the Liberal convention.
Ernstdale in 78?
Pardon me?
In 78?
Yeah, I think it was 78. One of the anniversaries. Anyway, we went down there and annoyed some of the Liberals, et cetera, et cetera.
So, but so after the convention or before the convention, he applied for citizenship?
Before.
Right, because you can...
What's interesting?
You can't run for office unless you're a Canadian citizen.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Is that nobody asked him if he was a citizen or not.
Okay. They just assumed.
They just assumed. Why would anybody who's not a citizen do this? You know, type of thing. So it was kind of like... if I may digress just a bit into history, it was kind of a certain German political figure back in the 20s by the name of Adolf Hitler. He was running for office until, you know, doing all the campaigning and stuff, until somebody pointed out that he wasn't a German citizen. And so he went and got German citizenship. they actually gave it to him. So, but I mean, yeah, the interesting idea that, you know, doing things with... when I don't really know about that. I'm not going to go down that road just yet. Okay. Anyway, so that was his beginnings. And then later on in the early 70s, I think it was, let me see, blah, blah, I think it was in the early 70s that he started getting into the Holocaust subject. He got some information from people and talked to people, and he found it very interesting. And so he started putting out information, sending copies of things to teachers and ministers and members of parliament and so on. And eventually somebody sent him a copy of Did 6 Million Really Die?, which really made his career for him after that. And so he put that out a lot. And next thing you know, he got charged with, that's a little ahead of time.
Yeah. Well, in the 70s, he was republishing or reprinting that pamphlet?
And a few others as well from other authors.
Right.
So, yeah, it was a booklet. So
what was his motivation at that time, though? Because he didn't make the Liberal Party. He's still not a Canadian citizen. So years have gone by. He's still a graphic artist. So he's a German national living in Canada.
Yeah. See, originally he wanted to do something political for Canada.
Right.
Because he saw that there was great potential in this country and it wasn't being
realized.
And so he would like to do that, to do something for this country. Now he lived. However, when they didn't allow him to be a citizen, then he's thinking, okay, well, if I can't do that, what else can I do? Type of thing, right? So he started.
Did that make him become anti-Canadian? Because that sure would make me anti-Canadian.
Yeah. No, he wasn't anti-Canadian at that time.
Yeah. Well, I sure would. Everyone else is given citizenship around him, I would guess. Well, how many people have denied citizenship in Canada?
I don't know, but it certainly isn't. I don't think it's too many.
That's unheard of.
Yeah.
Were other Germans that he knew or you knew of denied citizenship?
Nope. Anybody that I personally knew of, etc., who applied for citizenship got it. Mm-hmm. But
so I think he early on was identified as politically incorrect, even though,
or maybe politically problematic.
Yeah, he could become something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided to poke a hole in the balloon early.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Wow. Yep. So he's on the radar really early.
Yeah.
So then, and he was anti-communist, really. That was his big thing.
Yeah, that was probably one of his big problems.
But Canada, when was the McCarthy era in the United States when they were very anti-communist?
Or that was in the 50s.
So that sentiment was probably still strong in the United States, but in Canada it was not.
Mm-hmm.
And Trudeau in 68, who won the leadership convention, was a Fabian socialist, which is like a communist, I would think.
Yeah, it's down that road for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So they had, so he decided, you know, that he's going to, you know, keep fighting for the honor of his people and of the World War II generation of his father. His father had been a medic. He's a conscientious objector, really, but he was okay with being a medic during the war. So so he was fighting for, you know, bring out the truth, as much good facts and stuff as he could about the realities of that time, etc. So he decided, okay, how is he going to get the message out? Because at that time, of course, no internet, no nothing, right? The only way you could get a large audience really is through the mainstream media.
Yeah, the newspaper, really.
Yeah. So he thought about
really
it.
You can't really get access to the radio.
Yeah.
And TV, forget it.
Yeah. So he decided that he's going to do something really flamboyant. Mm-hmm. So see, he could make some money and get his message out. And what he decided to do was he decided to utilize the concept of Nazi UFOs.
Okay.
All right. So Nazi UFOs were...
I was going to ask you about UFOs because I don't really know about this topic with Zundel, but someone mentioned it.
Yeah. He decided on this because somebody gave him a book authored by a German... a German author, some kind of engineer or something from back in the day. And he claims that the Third Reich was working on UFO type technology at the time. Mm-hmm. So he basically translated the book and, you know, kind of changed it around a bit for North American audience. And he promoted it, right? And he made a killing. He made a killing of it. He had to reprint the book three times. And it wasn't so much just the money that he was making. It was that he got on lots of radio talk shows, interviews. Wow.
Did he believe in that, do you think? The UFOs?
I think he thought it was an interesting thing to look at. But he didn't have the time. And he basically was using it as a vehicle
right.
to get into the mainstream media. He got on CBC once. I forget the name of the program, but the
Do you have it in your archives?
Oh, that one, I wish I did. That was before we had the video and stuff, so couldn't record it.
Right.
But that was basically,
on CBC TV?
Pardon me?
That was on CBC TV?
Yeah, mainstream TV. Hosted Barbara Fromm. It was a very famous.
Oh, I know option. Barbara.
Yeah, so she said to him, well, aren't you done the most amazing thing? You put together the two most, high-profile... things in society, basically. And
what were the
two things were UFOs and Nazis. And so tell me about it. So he talked to her about the whole thing based. And the whole idea, of course, when you get on the shows and stuff, this was his strategy, was you get on the shows. And of course, if you're going to talk about Nazis and stuff, how long is it going to be before
the show's over?
The forbidden subject comes up and stuff, Hitler and all that. And that's where he wanted to go, right? So yeah, the actual talk about the UFOs went to the sidelines, and the political talk, which is what he wanted, came to the fore. And
so, yeah, that's what I was going to say. But this, the show would be over as soon as he said a few words.
It wasn't. They went the distance of the show. Yeah. So, and he was on lots of radio shows across Canada, some were very well-known radio talk shows and stuff in out west and other places on these subjects, etc. We have recordings of these.
You have them? Okay.
Yes, they're on that on my site, John Robinson 101.
Okay.
They're let's see. One of them is called Media Tactics, Part 1 and 2.
Can you give me all the links to these? Because they're really hard to find, as I said, on BitChute. I want to put them in the show notes.
Okay, I can do that.
Because I can't even... This is the frustration with BitChute. That's why maybe could get you to... if you have a directory of everything you've uploaded. Do you know? I can't even see how many videos are on your BitChute channel. There's no...
It says in the About tab, it'll tell you.
Oh, does it? Okay. Yeah. Oh, 994. Okay.
Yeah. So far, yeah.
So maybe that might be a good thing to put in a directory and just share the directory, because it's really easy to search when it's on your computer, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. For sure. Anyway, so he did that, and that got him recognition from a lot of people, and he got a lot of supporters out of that as well, that he would not have otherwise had, etc. So it was a very interesting way. Did he actually believe that there were UFOs? He didn't.
He didn't say.
He didn't really know whether there was or wasn't, and he didn't have time to do what proper research would be needed to find out. He was
okay, because that wasn't the point. That wasn't the point. He wanted.
No, he was just using that as a vehicle,
and it worked.
And it did work very well.
There's only one other guy in Canada that I know that talked about UFOs, and I think it was Paul Hellyer, the defense minister. That he's still famous to this day for that.
Oh yeah, really?
I think so. That. I'm not into UFOs, so I don't really know.
Yeah, me neither, really. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, anyway, not long after that came the big banning of his mail rights. He got a letter in the mail.
He was mailing out this. So he got interested in the Holocaust topic because his main mission was to defend Germans and their reputation. He didn't like the propaganda.
Yes, all the lies and calumnies and all that stuff.
Because was that a big thing in Canada?
Yes.
German sentiment, was it?
Yeah, like I said, I had the trouble in school. Right. And that was in the 50s.
And did he have any trouble himself personally being a German, other than just to have to put up with listening to anti-German media? Because there are a lot of Germans that came to Canada. Even, I don't know when they all came, what the immigration pattern was, but we had a city in Ontario called New Berlin.
Actually, he discovered that there's about, I think it's 18 towns and stuff in Ontario with German names.
Yeah. New Hamburg, New Berlin.
Yeah. Where Kitchener used to be Berlin. Right?
That's right. It was New Berlin, actually, I think.
No, it was just Berlin.
Oh, is it just Berlin? Okay.
Yep, it's just straight Berlin.
I figured it'd be New Berlin because there's New Hamburg. That's down the road. That's down the highway.
Oh, yeah. What interesting. Another thing that really got him going was in 1978 when that miniseries Holocaust came out.
Yeah.
He really was upset about that. And so by this time, he had lots of supporters around the world, big time supporters in South America, South Africa, Australia, and of course, United States and so on. And so he decided that we're going to get some action there. So he talked to all his supporters around the world and we did it here, and he got his groups to do it in all these other countries, all basically on the same day, is to go out and demonstrate in front of either the movie theaters or the cinemas, you know, and in front of German consuls and stuff like that, you know, protesting that they allow this nonsense to carry on.
Right. So he was really the only one defending Germans' reputation in Canada.
As far as I know.
I wonder, did he think that that was going to kill any chance of becoming a Canadian citizen? Was that important? Do you think that was important to him?
Well,
just for future protection?
I think after the 1963 refusal, I don't think he really thought much of it. No. After that, I don't think he actually, at that time, I don't think he thought that he was actually going to reapply or anything. So he didn't really care about that. Anyway, the one thing that was interesting was that the offices of Der Spiegel magazine, the big Time magazine type German newspaper in South Africa, contacted him and asked him to call off his demonstrations in front of their headquarters in Pretoria, or in Johannesburg, rather, because they were obviously, the protesters there were doing a good job. And so eventually, I think he did, but because basically the main hype over it all was gone anyway, so he just let that go. But yeah, that was another one of his thing. Yeah, that was grotesque, that Holocaust thing.
All right,
really something else. I mean, the miniseries, you know, was anyhow.
We've been going about an hour. I'm trying to figure out if maybe we can continue this tomorrow and do another hour, because otherwise the story there's a lot more to the story. I want to maybe just make this a two-parter if you're interested.
Sure.
I usually go about an hour, and there's a ton of the story, and because the big part, the interesting part is going to be at least an hour. What do you think?
Yeah, it works for me.
Well, I hope people are interested. I'm interested in the topic for many reasons. One, that he was and became somebody who didn't take the official story of World War II, which is pretty much what I've done with 9/11. The official story is wrong. I had no idea that the government could put out a story and everyone believed it and didn't question it. And it's to this day, it's official history. And that's something within my lifetime that I witnessed, at least on television. And my biggest thing with my research is that if the government or the powers that be can convince everyone of a lie, then we're screwed. It doesn't matter what the lie is. 9/11 or JFK, you name it. I figured that is a power that is incredible. If you can convince people, the majority of people, that it's a lie and shut down the dissenters, then you can say just about anything. So it seems like Ernst was doing the same thing with Germany, World War II. And because I want to talk about Adrian Arcand, because I guess I found out that he was the guy that turned Ernst's world upside down.
Indeed, he did.
And that's a person that I've never heard of. And I took Canadian history, not in university, but I took it in high school, and I had a pretty good time taking history. But Canadian history, I thought, was extremely boring. It was just about Indians and rivers, and it was boring as all get out. But man, if we learn some of the things that went on, at least immediate history for the last 60 years, it's pretty good stuff.
It is.
It's amazing stuff. And my people in my father's generation, he was born before World War I. They said Canada was the country to be in the 50s. And yes. and that guy who did pretty well in the 50s, he told me 20 years ago, Canada is not the place to prosper anymore. He said, if you want to go somewhere that is like Canada from the 50s, they go to Mexico, is where he went. He went back then because he said Canada was in its absolute prime in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
But something bad happened in the 60s and 70s, and now here we are today.
Yeah, Ernst used to always sing the praises of Canada. He loved this place back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what has happened to it now?
It has not changed for the better.
Well, we're not a country anymore. Our crime sinister said that. He said, we'll be the world's first post-nation state.
Yeah, post-nation.
How many Canadians know that? What does that mean? Isn't that a good question to ask? What do you mean there, Trudeau number two?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Exactly, yeah.
Does that mean we could just wipe the word Canada off the map and just...
I'm sure that's what he had in mind, yeah.
Well, it's still happening.
Anyway.
So why don't we do that? Why don't we pick up tomorrow? Same time, same place.
All right.
Because most of the audience is only good for about an hour. And I want to keep going on this topic if you do, because I find it interesting and fascinating. We're gonna just highlight the rest of the story.
All righty.
And then maybe eventually, if we keep going, just talk about some of the videos that he's put up, because there's a lot of stuff. 1,000 videos, and you videoed most of them, and you probably know the contents of all of them pretty good.
Pretty well.
And in a way, like I said, Ernst was sort of an original fakeologist, because he figured out that just about everything was upside down.
Sure.
And what a problem that is.
Well, like I said, if you watch some of his videos and stuff, he does more than talk just about the forbidden subject. He talks about a lot of other things in politics and in human things, etc., that are really worth listening to and taking cognizance of.
And as a German, you're one of the only, well, you're the only German I've found so far that's willing to talk about it. And number two, you're valuable because you're the curator of the videos. So I don't think anyone knows the video collection better than you.
Yes, I'm in all modesty, I would have to agree.
So if I have a question, say, hey, what did Ernst say about this? You could just pull up a video and say, oh, I've got it right here.
Most likely.
So that's why I think you're a very valuable resource when it comes to, because none of these topics have gone away today. They're all totally relevant. Just why is it that we can't talk about certain things? What are they hiding? You know, why can't we talk? Why can't we have serious talks about anything anymore? History, science, the nature of the world, the shape of the earth, what's up above us. None of this is talked about ever.
Well, I have the feeling that the powers that be would prefer to have the general population as simple as possible. And so they don't want to introduce anything serious.
They want us to be stupid and sick.
Yeah, they want us to be very simple and easily, and therefore easily manipulated.
Mm-hmm. That's what I really want to explore. And why was Adrian Archon thrown in jail during World War II for 5 years, put in a concentration camp without charge?
Yes, without charge, without trial, anything. Mm-hmm.
That's Canada. That's Canadian history right there. So why? What was so dangerous? The guy's an intellectual.
Yeah.
But Canadians put intellectuals in prison. Great.
Yes, that puts them ahead of the curve, doesn't it? Something we should be proud of.
So why don't we know about that?
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee if you said Adrian Archon, nobody would know who you're talking about. Not mm-hmm. one person. You could talk to 1,000 people. You probably wouldn't even find one.
Yes, I agree.
Ernst Zundel, for different reasons, yes, but not for anyone under 40. I don't think you're gonna get a reaction.
All right. So, okay. Now, before we sign off,
okay,
I was just looking at the chat, and I do want to reply to Dingo Baby.
Go for it.
And he's asked about Dr. Lorraine Day.
Okay.
And I know of Dingo. I know of Dr. Day, but I haven't met her myself. I've seen videos by her. I know of her her fight with cancer that she eventually cured through natural means, etc. But I don't know anything else about her, really. But I do believe she's still on the internet. She has her own channel and things. So if people want to know any more about her, that would be the place to look.
Yes, I've posted a couple. I think I put a couple of her videos on my channel as well. She's very outspoken, I think. There's a couple of older ladies that are like her that speak out, especially on the coronavirus hoax.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She might be one of them. I'd have to bring her up to actually recall her, but I've got at least three or four older ladies on my channel that are very outspoken. They say similar things, so I might be confused. So, okay, we're gonna go back. We're gonna start back tomorrow because we don't have a guest tomorrow. Anyhow, Monday is sort of a free open day because we have regular guests on my channel Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Although they're flexible, but tomorrow is open, so may as well just keep going tomorrow. And let me just tell you that Ernst's last speech in Mexico, which was the speech that really kind of turned me around on, okay, is this guy fake or is this guy a controlled opposition?
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of sites that can lead you in the wrong path on Ernst. That's why I figured I'll talk to a guy that spent the last 50 years with the guy?
Yeah, 40 some odd, yeah.
So you could probably answer the question better than anyone, because if he was a phony baloney, I don't think you'd hang around him. You'd probably figure that out too.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I could have made a lot more money working at my trade rather than working with him. So
yeah,
if I thought he was phony, I would have been gone.
Yeah, you gave up a lot. You gave up a lot. So what I'll do is, to play out, I'll play this last speech. I played it before because it's pretty good. I'll play the show out on this, and then we'll reconvene tomorrow.
Okay.
Same time, same place.
Right on.
All right. I hope you enjoyed yourself, John. But have you done interviews before? Do you have any?
The odd one, yeah.
Okay. Are they on your channel?
Yeah, they're in that folder that you downloaded of all my videos.
Okay. Any long form video interviews or just?
I think I put them in. Anyway, I did. The notable ones were two half hour ones and 2 1-hour ones.
Oh, okay.
In various places. And of course, that one short one, as when I spoke in 1987 at the IHR. So.
Well, let me just show people, because they can share, they can get a hold of all the videos that you've shared with me.
Okay.
So if anyone wants to grab these videos and have them just show up on their computer instead of trying to download them using a download program, you can go to fake11.com. That's my shortener. fake11.com/Zundel. Is it Zundel or Zundel?
Zundel.
Zundel. So it's fake11.com/ZUNDEL or ZUNDEL if you are in the Commonwealth countries. And you can sync all these files at once. This isn't everything you have, but this is a good collection that you've given.
Yeah, the majority.
So you can just grab them up and download them and then find them. So if there's any link, any of the things we talked about tonight, John, if you just want to send me an email with the links on your site, it'll be easier for me, and I'll just post the links in the show notes.
Okay.
If you can remember what we talked about. But this video of our show tonight, it will be on FakoTube in about 15 minutes. So you can just download it if you want to listen again.
Alrighty.
All right. Thank you, John. And I'm going to play Ernst Sundel, his last talk in Mexico in 2015. And this is just the last 3 minutes or so. And I guess it was his last public appearance.
Indeed.
So here we go. All right. Thanks, John.
Okay. See you tomorrow.
Take care. So, let's get this audio working. Unmute the plate. Here we go. Ernst Sundel.
I was, of course, fully alert that this was going to be my fate. I was not blind to the power of my enemies. And I did not do this publication and bring Leuchter to Toronto, to the courtroom, for myself. Because for me, introducing the Leuchter report in my defense was a disaster. It made my enemies far more furious than if I had not brought it. But I wanted to do this because we had, for the first time, separated the paper war and elevated it to a scientific plateau. And it was a totally different ball game from that moment on. And I did that for humanity. I can honestly say that, because Germany was one of the leading intellectual and productive nations in Europe. You could say Germany was the leading nation in Europe, and that the world accused my fatherland of this genocidal maniac deed poisoned the relationship between all kinds of other nations, and I wanted to remove the poison. And if it killed me as a person, as it nearly did, but if it killed me, this little publication was my gift to the world to free them from this terrible trauma that was induced in the people of the world after the Second World War. So people have asked me,
all right, sorry that this thing has gone for a dump. I guess I'll play the rest of it later. I tell you, why is it giving me a hard time? Anyway, I'll play the rest of the speech tomorrow. Let me just refresh it one more time here. Hold on a sec. FacoTube, don't let me down like this. 154. Let's hear.
Nations, and I wanted to remove the poison. And if it killed me as a person, as it nearly did, but if it killed me, this little publication was my gift to the world to free them from this terrible trauma that was induced in the people of the world after the Second World War. So people have asked me, oh, Ernst, was it worth it? You know, would you do it again? Naturally. Naturally, with my mother in my ear, that I had to do this. Was I going to say, no, I would never do it again? No, I can tell you quite honestly, I consider it a privilege. I consider it a privilege. And it humbles me that I was chosen by destiny to bring this forth. All the prison cells, all the times when I had a chance to renege, it never ever occurred to me that I could renege on having done that. So I am proud and can tell you I'm glad that I did it.